Serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and an episode recorded at the beautiful George E. Wallen Veterans Home in Ogden, Utah, with a guy who helped get it built. We've heard how Bob Ramos left school at age 10 to work and support the family after his father died, and also how he ended up on the front lines in Europe with the 86th Infantry Division.
How about when Germany surrendered? Was that a big deal?
Oh, Paul, what a feeling. What a feeling. It happened to us. We were in Austria, May 8th, 1945. The Germans have surrendered. Just word of mouth. Pass it on. Just keep calm. There'll be more information. Then after an hour or so, the sergeants get together and then they come around and patch in the back and say, okay, get up. The Germans have surrendered. And then we were told at exactly midnight, Eisenhower has given the order for every American Allied artillery gun would fire one salvo at exactly midnight. So we looked for that. And when it happened, it was like this daylight, just for a second. But we didn't whoop de da or anything. We just kind of sat where we could have a good seat and started thinking, I made it.
But you weren't done yet.
Not the 86th. We came back to the harbor, board ship, back to the 86th pier, the same pier that we're not going over, to come all the way across the United States to Oklahoma, Camp Gruber, where the 86th was going to go, processed. They gave us 2 weeks' leave.
When you had that two-week leave, did you get to go home and see your mom?
Yep.
What was that like?
They think that you're going to get killed, hurt, whatever, moms.
Yeah.
Here I come home and so forth. And I didn't tell them beforehand.
That you were coming. She didn't know.
Here I'm in my uniform and so forth. Of course, she just cried and cried. Mm. My sister, my other brothers were gone. So it was just the biggest day in our family. Mm. I was home. But big question mark, Japan.
Yeah, so here you show up out of the blue.
I mean, 2 weeks
yeah.
with my friends, my family, and then mom, I'm going to have to go back this time to Japan. You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, here she thinks all her prayers have been answered. Her son has come home,
right.
And then you're heading back off to war.
Yeah, Cam Stoneman, board ship. In the Pacific. And again, there were flotilla ships and so forth going to Japan. We were on the ship when they dropped the two. So then we thought, everybody in 86 says, okay, guys, oh man, we're going to go home. We're going to go home. This is a good day.
Yeah.
We're all here. We're going to go home. No. All of a sudden, the PA assistant came on and says, 86 is going to the Philippines to relieve the 37th Infantry who had been on the line for months. We found ourselves in the Philippines for 6 months because the Japanese did not believe that Japan had surrendered.
There were still pockets of soldiers.
Thousands of them. Thousands. We built POW camps just crammed full, and some of those guys were committing suicide. They had brought hand grenades in camp. Our civil engineers built those camps, and we guarded them for a spell and then turned it over to the Filipino army. But then at first we had to secure the waterworks, radio stations, things like that. The 86 first secured that, then we turned it over to the Filipino. But there were thousands and thousands of Japanese troops in the mountains. That took months and months to get down, to give themselves up.
Was there anything memorable about the time that you spent guarding those camps and seeing all these Japanese prisoners?
Looking at them just like opposite of us, but knowing that they started it, not us. And now the atrocities that they had performed and so forth, it was hatred, hatred, hatred. I felt, and so my friends' hatred as to what they had done then got us into this world war. But then after a spell, it's just like us.
Yeah.
They're ordered to do whatever, you know.
So initially, much like you had probably felt about the Germans when you found out what had happened in the Holocaust, you know about the Bataan Death March, you know about the execution and torture of so many prisoners, so you are despising these people you're guarding, but the more time you spent around them, the more human you realized they were?
Yeah, because we did buddy buddy and so forth kind of thing.
Yeah.
They were prisoners. We were on the outside. But then we kind of filtered away and got some prisoners that we could trust to help us clean up the camps where we were. So we became like friends.
So you were drafted into World War II. You served in both Europe and the Pacific in the infantry. Not too many guys can say that. But then you got drafted again during the Korean War?
Went home, went back to school. I thought, you know, school can help me and it's free. Might as well take advantage. G.I. Bill. Became a civilian, got me a car, my first car ever. I felt more like a man instead of an 18-year-old kid that left not knowing nothing, scared to death, but survived two continents. I felt so good. Texas had, at that time, every guy that got discharged had to join the reserves. So I joined the reserves. Didn't pay any attention to them because I thought, I've done my thing. I'm okay. Then all of a sudden, Korea came up. I got orders that the medical unit that I was with originally got recalled. So the Air Force had just come into being.
Yeah.
I left jets. If they're going to call me back again, might as well try to get into something that I like.
And he didn't just like the Air Force, he loved it. Bob put in 20 more years, including handling security surrounding the U-2 spy planes in Del Rio, Texas, where he also supervised an Air Force stockade for a while. After retiring, his desire to help people kept him volunteering. 27 years at the base pharmacy at Hill Air Force Base, he also worked with politicians and businessmen to fund programs for returning veterans from Vietnam. He organized the very first veterans job fair in the USA, and when he met a kindred spirit named George Wallen, a vision for veterans' homes in the Beehive State started to come into focus.
I had my first claim for this veteran. I took it to the VA, and there was George there.
Uh-huh.
So we started talking and found out we had a lot in common. He was a combat medic. I was a combat medic for a short time.
Right.
We both got trained. We started becoming buddies and so forth. Then we started talking about veterans' homes in Utah. Just a dream.
Because there were none at the time.
Right. Idaho had four. When we found that out, we thought, hey, how come they got four and we don't have any? And we got as many veterans more. So George and I started yakking.
He started making noise, trying to get people's attention.
Politicians in Utah, for some reason, Paul, they just didn't care. We don't have time. We got other priorities.
So what do you think finally made the difference? Is it just persistence?
A lot of persistence, yes. At one time, the state, when we asked for funds to start one, Sandy appropriated funds for a soccer stadium, millions of dollars.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't get a mention.
Uh-huh.
So when they would get this bus, 40 passenger bus, and then we got a bunch of soccer balls. And we went into the Capitol. We knocked in some of the politicians' office and threw a soccer ball into their office. We got a bunch of soccer balls all over the Capitol. It kind of, whoops,
yeah. You know. That sounds crazy, but that gesture changed some minds.
Paul, you don't know. You go out accidentally like this, and it gets their attention.
So Governor John Huntsman signed the bill that created the funding to build this facility. How much did it cost to build this?
A little over $13
million. $13 million.
13 and a half acres.
So it has a capacity of 120 veterans.
With the largest of the four. That's like I call it the flagship.
The largest veterans home in the state of Utah. So you were here to open it in 2009.
Break ground.
Uh-huh. How proud of a moment was that for you when it actually opened and the first veterans got to come live here?
I think it got too big for me.
It was overwhelming.
Overwhelming because the thought of me being a part of this didn't even come to my senses. If I go back before I started doing anything, I come from nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. Dirt, practically.
You were sleeping on the floor until you got in the Army.
No schooling to speak of. Self-taught. Work hard because nothing is going to be given to you. And I know things get done if you work hard.
After everything you've been through, the childhood and the hardships that you dealt with, that they shared with us, infantry combat in World War II in Europe and then heading over to the Pacific, 20 years in the Air Force, everything since then. What would you say that you're most thankful for and what you're most proud of?
My humble way of thinking. First, I was lucky to have been born in this country, and I'm thankful for my mom, who raised us and taught us right from wrong. I was offered so much by my country for having served. I was offered so much schooling benefits that no other country has ever offered their veterans. And I know this to be true because I've done this kind of work for over 60 years now. I believe in a divine being always there. I pray every morning. I pray every night. I start with thanking my God for my health and my life. And then I say, God, let me help one person today. If I can help one, I'm okay. If I can help five, fine. But let me help at least one.
Someone said to me recently, do for one what you wish you could do for many. You've been doing that for a long time. And now you look back and you have done it for many. And everybody who lives in this veterans home has you to thank for helping to make it possible.
Yeah, but see, I don't feel like that.
Isn't that the truth, though?
Yeah, but I am just one of many. But I don't think I've done it by myself. I've speak up on what you believe. And if you believe in it hard enough, it could come true. There's so many little things that fit into this giant puzzle, but it takes more than one.
Yep.
I think the only one that is a one is God.
Amen. Well, I want to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for serving veterans for so long. I know you're not going to stop anytime soon.
No.
Is there anything else that you think people really need to know about this country you love so much?
I think our younger generation needs to slow down and at one time or another stop and think. I have a lot to be thankful for. I want to thank Almighty for this day. If tomorrow I'm here, thank him again, because he's the big reason of what I've done. He is my advisor.
Well, this beautiful veterans home is evidence you've been getting good advice for a long time. That is Bob Ramos of Ogden, Utah. Check out the photos of Bob at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, where you'll also see a short video with what President Barack Obama gave Bob when he visited the White House in 2012. We're out of time for now. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.